Support for Connecticut East this week comes from Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region is the region's federally designated economic development organization, providing services and resources to the region's businesses and municipalities. Find out more at sector, that's SECTER.org. Service Master by Mason are experts at eliminating harmful mold and mildew from your home or business. Don't let mold damage your property and cause health concerns. Call 860-455-1249. And Day Kimball Health, nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health, healthcare in motion. Learn more at daykimball.org. Its last CEO retired after 50 years, so what's next for the nonprofit TVCCA? We sit down with the nonprofit's newest and youngest CEO, Joshua Kelly, to find out his plans moving forward. Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. Last week's episode, we talked about a human services agency up in the northeast of the region. And this week, we're back down in New London County and finding out more about the work and services of the Thames Valley Council for Community Action. In 2025, the nonprofit Community Action Agency will turn 60 years old. Until recently, it had a CEO in charge of it for 50 of those 60 years until they retired in 2023. The new CEO, Joshua Kelly, is the youngest person to head up the agency, and we sat down with Joshua to talk about his new role and moving the organization forward. Joshua, thanks ever so much for inviting us in. I'm sure it's probably still busy because you've not been CEO really for that long, have you?
No, I haven't. I have only been CEO for 5 months and just a few days. It's been an exciting whirlwind. We have had some staff transition. We've had certainly new programs that are being discussed, that are being reviewed at the state level. We have a lot of funding that's being considered, again, state, federal level, lots of funding being pursued, and I'm learning it all.
Before we get into what TVCCA is, let's talk about, very briefly, the previous CEO, who was here for an incredible 50 years. I mean, there aren't many organizations that can say, yep, we've had that sort of leadership for that sort of length of time. What's it like coming in off the back of literally a legend at an organization, knowing that things have to move on and things have to change as well?
You know, it's a challenge and an opportunity. The opportunity is Deb Monahan, my predecessor, left TVCCA in an amazing position. She worked, like you said, a lifetime to make sure that TVCCA's programs grew, the number of programs that we provided expanded, and that the people of New London County received the best quality services as well as that quantity. So I'm in a very fortunate position where there's a ship that runs really well, and I have now been asked to come in and serve as its captain. And I also have some challenges because, of course, I'm not Deb. I have had the opportunity to be the CEO in another organization. I've come into other organizations before in this capacity. And it's a challenge every time, but it's about making sure that expectations are set, about making sure that people understand that things aren't going to change radically right away. You know, I've been trying to be a sponge, trying to absorb as much as I can of what Deb was delivering on a day-to-day basis, what Deb brought to the table, try and take as much of that as I can and make it my own. But at the same time, making sure that everybody knows what direction we're headed in and that we're all rowing in the same direction.
Let's talk about you. 28 years old, probably one of the youngest CEOs, maybe even in the state. Certainly at one point, I believe you were considered the youngest CEO, certainly in your previous position, which was town manager of Winchester, I believe, which is northwestern Connecticut.
That's right, just north of Torrington.
You are a Waterford native, so yes. You're actually southeastern Connecticut, so you've bounced all over the state. You've had a lot of jobs in your very short time, as it were, all of them sort of like connected in a way, dealt with nonprofits. Obviously, you've been with municipalities. But why did you want this job?
It's hard to tell that story without a little bit of context in my past. I actually went and I studied opera and music performance for a couple of years at Ithaca College. I loved it. It's very much my passion, but I realized that for my career, I really wanted to help people every day. I switched up. I studied politics for a while, and that's when I ended up running for office on the local level in Waterford twice. Two different times I won and had the opportunity to serve, and that's when I realized I like being able to see the change and the difference that could be made in a community in front of my eyes. So municipal government, retirement made sense. I moved forward with that, ended up getting my master's at UConn. And then I arrived at a moment in time when I was town manager in Winchester where I realized I was spending more of my time talking about tax rates and talking about assessed values than I was about helping people on the ground who every day are facing financial struggle, who every day are facing questions that they don't know who to turn to for answers. And when I saw this position posted in my home county, you know, in my backyard, so to speak, it was like a dream come true. It was one of those, it clicked with me. I saw it and I knew I had to apply because I could make such a tremendous difference without necessarily spending quite as much time talking about those other items in my past job, like taxes, that I didn't enjoy as much. So an opportunity to impact more lives, an opportunity to work with more staff members, and an opportunity to give back to the community and the communities surrounding that really gave so much to me when I was growing up.
As we said, nonprofits are different to municipalities. You know, we're not just talking budgets, but also, you know, the scope of their work. Municipalities can often be quite narrow in scope because there's a lot of departments. You know, nonprofits, certainly a little bit of a wider scope. How much pressure are you putting on yourself coming from that arena into this arena? And also at a time when, you know, all nonprofits are struggling.
Absolutely. It's a tremendous change. It's a tremendous difference. And I just said all of that about not wanting to talk about taxes, but it's much easier to try and expand a social service department in a municipality when you can adjust the tax rate. When all of a sudden here I am in the nonprofit sector and I have to have conversations, I have to make connections, I have to really keep my eye out for grant opportunities and work with the staff that is knowledgeable about all of these systems to try and attract and bring in funding that's going to expand whatever program it is that we're looking at. And then once we have the funding, the number of strings that are attached to, you know, in a municipal government, for the most part, when we had our various social service programs, which weren't numerous, but we had a few, we were able to write our own policy. We said, well, this is a need that we're seeing in our community. This is how we're going to address it. And now it's, well, this is how the state believes we are best able to address it. Even if we see things a little differently, we're going to go with them. That's what our contract says. And that's the way in which we're going to administer our programs. So as a community action agency, TVCCA was founded back in 1965 after a number of laws were passed on the federal level to establish the community action agencies to fight poverty as part of the war against poverty. And we're in a position now where we've really taken a look at our mission statement. And this was done by Deb Monahan right before I came on board, really in 2023. Took a look at that mission statement and said, we need to step above and beyond just the scope of we're administering programs. We need to take a look at how are we addressing root causes of poverty. So that's some of the conversation that we're starting to have now within the agency. What can we do as a nonprofit organization to step forward? And that's something that I always did in municipalities. Whenever I started in a new municipal government, whether it was Bolton or in Winchester, tried to take a look and say, what are the needs out in the community? What are some of the root causes of those needs? And how do we bring it forward? So from that perspective, there's similarities between my municipal work and my nonprofit work. But funding-wise, you're right. This is a very stressful time for nonprofits with the American Rescue Plan Act funds expiring. And in a world where there seems to be rampant inflation in every area except government investment in these social service programs. So it is a lot of pressure. I am very fortunate to have a tremendous staff here, many of whom were able to work with Deb, some of whom are brand new coming on board with me, but every single one of them has been willing to put their nose to the grindstone and figure out how to make it work, despite the fact that I feel around every corner we've seen fewer funds coming in the door and more expectations coming from the state and federal governments.
We're going to talk about the various services in a minute, because I think, and we were talking before we started this interview, and even I said to you, you know, I only thought TVCCA did this particular thing, and clearly that is not the case as a host of services. But before we get into the crux of what it is that you do, I just want to put this point to you. There are a lot of nonprofits here in Connecticut, you know, just like many other states. Is it a case as well that we've got to a point where we're at saturation, where there's so many of these nonprofits that you're overlapping and you're basically going after the same pot of money?
That's a really great question. And coming from municipal government, I'm not familiar with the concept of overlap. Our town line ends and another one starts. And as much as there may have been competitive grants, there wasn't competition for, well, who gets to serve this person and where does that money come from? Not the same way in any case. So with the nonprofit world, I'm very quickly learning, you're right, there are a lot of nonprofits. There are a lot of nonprofits in southeastern Connecticut that not necessarily necessarily do the same thing, but we might be in the same sphere. You know, there may be 5 to 10 nonprofits that all deal with some type of housing, whether that's trying to help build affordable housing or whether that's rapid rehousing for some of our population that doesn't have a home. There are a lot of different ways that we are all trying to get at the same issues. I think that over time, these niches, these different lenses and these different approaches have developed. But in many cases, it's funding still from the same source. And if one nonprofit didn't exist or wasn't running a certain program, it would be something that maybe TVCCA or maybe another one of our partner organizations would be picking up. So that makes it challenging. What's really heartened me joining the nonprofit sphere in Southeastern Connecticut is how many different collaborative and hub type groups are forming. I think that there is a real emphasis and a spotlight right now on the number of services that are being offered and the fact that the dial hasn't moved in many areas. You know, we still have homelessness in the area. We still have poverty. We've been here for the last almost 60 years. What are the outcomes? So seeing a lot of these organizations come together in these partnerships, I just had a meeting earlier today with individuals from the United Way, and they are working certainly to help coordinate and make sure that nonprofits are all on the same page. We're, like I said about our staff, we're all trying to row in the same direction. We're trying to get the nonprofits to do the same thing. There are some philosophical questions that come up around that too. Do we need as many nonprofits? Should they all be as large as TVCCA? Is there a place for a lot of smaller nonprofits? How do we collaborate with them? At what point does the state and federal government's responsibility end and the nonprofit work begin? So this has all been fascinating for me to learn about. I hope that anybody who's listening will take a look at what are some of the nonprofits that exist in your town or that serve your town. Certainly, if you reach out to TVCCA, we can help you get connected with whatever resources you might need. But there's a lot of work, great work that's happening in the area and a lot of challenges that we're all facing.
That segues us nicely into, as I say, the services that you provide. And as I said a few moments ago, even I thought that TVCCA just did one particular thing. Where I live, there is a very nice TVCCA children's center. And so therefore I thought, oh, well, it's all about kids. Well, it isn't. You do very good work, obviously, with young children. Talk to us about some of the services, because, I mean, one of them, people have been listening on the radio recently over the past few months, they will have heard advertisements, energy assistance.
Very much so. Energy assistance is one of the largest programs monetarily that we run, and it also impacts largest populations that we have. So this is a program where anybody who makes under a certain income level in a given year is eligible to apply and receive money to help them purchase fuel, heating fuel. So that can be, traditionally, it's in the form of heating oil if you have a boiler that takes oil. In some cases, we also make payments for natural gas delivery to your home or for electric energy consumption for homes that use that type of heating. But we have an opportunity to send thousands of dollars out the door every year to individuals around the state. I believe that the total amount that we gave to an individual household this year was about $1,400, maybe a little bit more than that. But we were able to service thousands, over 10,000 households. So it's a significant program with a large impact. And we have been administering this program. It's called the Federal LIHEAP program, and we've been able to administer this for decades. So it's certainly very impactful, and it's something that especially our seniors in our community and individuals who aren't otherwise able to afford heat, it's not something that I think we contemplate every day as a need. You know, we usually think about food and a roof over our head, but what does that roof contain? You know, does it contain some place where people can be comfortable, where they can sleep well, where they can study, where they can take a shower and be healthy and clean? And this is something that we're able to help provide.
Again, we were saying before we started recording the interview about stereotypes, and you were saying about one of the biggest stereotypes that you come across is people's thoughts as to who actually is able to get services from TVCCA. Explain to us that and exactly who is able to get those services then.
Absolutely. I think as an anti-poverty agency, there are a lot of folks who I've met in my time who will be of an understanding that somebody who's in poverty means that it's somebody who's living out on the street, means it's somebody who is not employed. And that's not true. There are individuals who live in our community who work, whether it's full-time, part-time, it depends on how many children you have, it depends on if your partner is able to work, if you have a partner, and there are a lot of factors that go into establishing who lives in poverty, who is eligible for our programs. We have individuals who are eligible for some of our programs who do work full-time jobs, who have maybe a child child or two whose partners even work, but they still, whether it's because they simply make too little, it's a minimum wage job, whether it's because maybe in certain programs our eligibility requirements have a higher threshold or some combination thereof. But there are a lot of individuals who work those full-time jobs, who have homes, who maybe are just older and are on a fixed income, who are all eligible. We have a lot of seniors who rely on our energy program in particular, and it's a huge help to them as individuals who may not be dealing with a significant amount of money each year to cover their base expenses. This is something that makes sure they don't have to sweat in the winter.
I'm just going to quickly list some of the services, and then I want to get on to back to the child services. But things like you've mentioned seniors, you've got housing, you've got food and nutrition, you have financial services that you can assist people with, employment, Alliance for Family Support, and you've got things called assistance navigators as well. So just to give people a quick rundown, as I say, unfortunately we can't go into all of them, but that is a host of services that you provide. Let's get back to the children, because that's now become a real sort of like hot button issue here in the state, along with obviously a few others, is the childcare crisis. And I know that TVCCA is first and forefront there, along with other agencies looking to try and help and deal with that matter. Talk to us about what it is that you're doing and what sort of like services, but also I believe something in Groton may be materializing as well, which is very, very important for the people in that sort of area. So, you know, bring us up to speed on that.
Just to provide a little context about TVCCA in the childcare realm, we own and operate three different facilities throughout southeastern Connecticut that are center-based childcare and early childhood education. And those are located in Groton on Center Street and on Bayonet Street in New London. And then we have another one in Taftville. So those are our three centers. We also have some classrooms that we're able to make use of in Griswold. I know that we have some services that are provided out of the Friendship School in Waterford. There's another classroom in Montville. And these are all areas where we're able to provide not only federal Head Start programs, but also state-funded Little Learners programs. So this is working with children who are aged 6 weeks up to 5 years old. Depending on how old they are, they may be eligible for or ineligible for different parts of that program, of each of those programs. But it's very holistic for early childhood education and care. And we also have an early Head Start program, which is home-based, where we have visitors who will go out. So as you said, have these facilities, and there's an increasing demand across southeastern Connecticut, and there has been a demand for some time. This is not necessarily a new crisis, but I think a new spotlight that has been shining on the crisis, and especially as wages continue to stagnate in this realm and we see inflation rising, we have fewer and fewer individuals who are willing to go into early childhood education. And to some extent, it makes sense. If you can go into education and you can start at an elementary school or as a kindergarten teacher at $55,000 a year in some local schools, why would you instead choose to come to early childhood education center where the state is reimbursing us such that we have to pay closer to $35,000 a year? So you can make significantly more going into some of those public education systems. And we have been working as TVCCA to advocate for additional state and federal funding to make sure that our two major programs, Little Learners and Head Start, are able to attract the talent and keep the talent that we have, because I just saw them in action yesterday. We had a family fun night over at Tile Middle School in Montville and saw so many of our kids in action, so many of our teachers in action, and it was really wonderful to see. We want to keep that talent, make sure that they are comfortable in their lives with this as their primary source of income, make sure that they are not in poverty, because there are some individuals who work for us who unfortunately were not able to, through the state and federal reimbursement rates, we're not able to pay them enough to be out of that ALICE threshold or out of that poverty threshold and make sure that they keep coming back. Beyond that, we have a growing number of children who are in need of these services. We do, thankfully, in some ways, and it's unfortunate in other ways, I can get into that. We have more preschools that are opening up out of our public education. It's a good thing from the perspective of we should have universal access to these programs. Difficult for TVCCA and a challenge for TVCCA because it means that we have more kids who are choosing to go into some of these public streams. But there is certainly the child care that's needed before preschool. Our Little Learners program is really where we're growing. People don't have access to affordable child care. We are working right now on the construction of a new childcare facility on the site of where our Groton facility currently is. They are temporary modular buildings. I don't know if you've had the chance to get over there, but they're in bad shape. They were put up decades ago. They were never meant to last more than a few years. And here they are. We still have kids who are in and out of those buildings every weekday. So we are working hard to try and fundraise and advocate for money from, so far we have $3 million thanks to the help of Congressman Joe Courtney and his office and the advocacy that he did at the congressional level. We have another $2 million that was very recently awarded to TVCCA, and that's still pending through the state government. Representative Christine Conley was a huge help to that, as well as a number of other representatives, such as Representative Kathleen McCarty, who's on our board of directors. So we've been blessed to have support to get us to a threshold where we've now reached $5 million in fundraising. This facility, though, is, with inflation as it is right now and the cost of construction materials and labor, estimated to cost $17 million. So we continue the hard work to cross that threshold and move forward.
I suppose the final point I want to put to you, and thank you for your time, do you think this has been a bit of a baptism of fire for you?
I'd say so. And I always thrived in that environment. But as I said, you know, it's a change to come from the municipal side to the nonprofit side. Not only am I learning about the various ways that we obtain funding and the various ways that our programs operate, I'm also trying to learn the alphabet soup of it all and making sure that I have a clear understanding of even some of the acronyms that are used on a day-to-day basis. But we have had transition too, not just in my office, but we had Megan Brown, our former chief operations officer, step into a wonderful job over with the Community Foundation of Eastern Connecticut. But of course, we miss her very much. We have had one of our own step into that role now, John Paul Mandelberg, as chief operations officer, who was formerly our director of housing. And we've had other transitions too. We've welcomed Penny Newberry to our staff as a senior director of communications and development. And now we are on the hunt for someone to join our team as a senior director of budget and accounting. So I continue to put the team together. I certainly have had the opportunity, I'm going to put it that way, to take on more tasks than I think I imagined taking on in my first 5 months, and really getting my hands dirty and doing great things with the work. And I am very impressed with the staff, the way that they run. I wouldn't have been able to endure the baptism by fire without them, but I would say so. It certainly has been an enlightening experience, a good challenge, and I can't wait for what comes next.
Joshua Kelly, the CEO of Thames Valley Council for Community Action, otherwise known as TVCCA. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you ever so much for being on the podcast. And of course, we wish you and the entire team continued success.
Thank you very much.
And if you want to find out more about the services and resources of TVCCA that might be available to you in your area, then head over to their website at tvcca.org. Connecticut East This Week is made possible by Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region. We're the region's federally designated economic development organization, providing businesses and municipalities with services and resources to make Southeastern Connecticut stronger and more vibrant. From small business financing to regional economic development strategy to business advising and support to government procurement assistance, we can help you grow. Find out more at sector, that's SECTER.org. And
when your home or business is damaged by fire, water, or mold, you just want things to go back to normal fast. That's why Service Master by Mason is available 24/7. Their certified technicians have been restoring homes and businesses from disasters or even helping with specialty cleaning needs for over 30 years. You can rely on Service Master by Mason for everything from fire, smoke, and water damage to mold or a lingering odor. Call today at 860-455-1249 or visit servicemasterbymason.com.
It's time for the quiet corner to make some noise. Some Day Kimball Health noise. Largest employer in our region kind of noise. Day Kimball Health serves more than 125,000 people, offers cardiology, orthopedics, and oncology specialties. It's having the region's only comprehensive and accredited breast center kind of noise. We're nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health. Healthcare in motion.
Time now for a look at other stories making the headlines this week. Connecticut's General Assembly is weighing several bills related to climate change. Edwin J. Vieira from the Connecticut News Service has more.
It comes after what advocates describe as detrimental inaction on the legislative body's part in the last 2 years. This is due to misinformation, Republican filibusters, and committee inaction. HB 5004 is a major climate bill before lawmakers. Lori Brown with the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters says it covers a lot of ground to put action behind the state's 16-year-old climate goals.
This effort, this session, is all about what can we do that would incentivize businesses, individuals, organizations, companies, entities, institutions, all to start really taking steps towards reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
The bill received wide support at a public hearing. Critics say the bill encroaches on their freedoms and eliminates energy supply competition. Others argue climate change isn't caused by greenhouse gases, so this bill is unnecessary. HB 5004 is expected to be voted on by the House this session. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
As Revolution Wind, the next offshore wind project out of State Pier in New London, gets ready to start construction off the coast of Rhode Island at the end of April, another federal lawsuit has been filed against the project. Rhode Island-based Green Oceans, a nonpartisan community group, has filed their lawsuit against the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, BOEM, and three other federal agencies, saying they have all broken the law in giving permits to Danish energy company Ørsted for their South Fork Wind and Revolution Wind projects. Dr. Lisa Quatrochi-Knight is the president and co-founder of Green Oceans and says their lawsuit is about where these wind farms will be located at Cox's Ledge off the Rhode Island coast.
It is an incredibly biodiverse marine ecosystem that NOAA, back in November, designated as a habitat of particular concern because it is one of the last remaining spawning grounds for southern New England cod, and it is a winter foraging region for five endangered whale species. Nothing should have ever been developed on Cox's Ledge. And yet they have gone ahead and permitted these two projects.
Nicole Verdi is the New England head of government affairs and policy for Ørsted and said they can't talk about the lawsuits, but do recognize there is pushback against this new industry in the U.S.
The states in New England have really ambitious mandates or goals when it comes to the clean energy transition, but the states aren't going to build the clean energy. You need to partner with developers. Ørsted tries to be that partner to really help support the clean energy ambitions of the states, and we do try to do that in a thoughtful, genuine, kind of open educational approach, and we're going to continue to do that, and hopefully, you know, folks will understand what we're doing and why and be supportive.
The Preservation Society of Newport and the Southeast Lighthouse Foundation, both based in Rhode Island, filed their federal lawsuits against BOEM, saying the agency ignored the National Historic Preservation Act and the National Environmental Policy Act when it granted Ørsted its offshore wind permits. South Fork Wind, a 12-turbine wind farm, is already producing clean energy for homes in New York State, and the 65-turbine Revolution Wind will provide clean energy for Connecticut and Rhode Island when it's completed. The lawsuits are not against Ørsted. Residents of the city of New London will soon get a unique look at how their city is run. A neighborhood academy is being restarted by the city in the hopes it will provide more civic engagement between City Hall and the local community. Mike Passero is the mayor of the city of New London and says it's a great opportunity for people to learn.
They get the behind-the-scenes look into the police department, the fire department, all of the departments. They also learn about all the boards and commissions, very important parts of government like the Planning and Zoning Commission. But that's all civilians serving in government positions, and just how the basics of the city council and the administration, how we work together, the budget. They learn all about how the city works, and it's an eye-opener for a lot of people.
The Neighborhood Academy was originally established in the city in 2005, but stopped in 2016 when the coordinator Barbara Dixon retired. Yamila Mateo is the new neighborhood coordinator and says they hope the local community will embrace this opportunity to access what the city has to offer them.
The direct government into the New London City Hall and beyond the City Hall. We are functions. We have different people. We have the building department. We have the rec department all in one that people don't even realize realize, how do I get a birth certificate from the city clerk? Even little things like that. So it's going to be a lot of education, an initiation, so that people can take their city back and say, I want to be empowered.
It's believed the academy is the only one of its kind in the state currently. New London residents can apply for the academy by visiting the city's Facebook page, and applications must be in by May 15th. And April is National Donate Life Month, celebrating those living and deceased who made the decision to donate their organs, eyes or tissue, and give hope to the 100,000 people across the nation who are on the national transplant waiting list. And according to the latest figures from the Donate Life organisation, Connecticut hit a new record in 2023, with 130 deceased Connecticut residents being organ donors that year, up from 116 in 2022, and that number has been steadily climbing for the past 5 years. Currently in Connecticut, 1,061 individuals are on the donor waiting list. You can register to become a donor at the Donate Life website or by checking yes to organ donation on your driver's license. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com, or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms, on demand, and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow, and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott-Smith. Thank you for listening.